welcome back to another episode of Film Expert versus Film Noob. I am not here to start this episode. I'm here to let you know that this is an episode with a lot of spoilers as usual, but we do recommend watching this movie first. Without further ado, let's start the show.
Hello and welcome back to another episode of Film Expert versus Film Noob. I'm Chewy.
And I'm Kat.
And today we're talking about The Green Knight by David Lowry.
Yes.
Yes, The Green Knight. The Green Knight. I'm so excited about this movie. I was telling you about this a couple days ago, but David Lowry is probably like one of my like new favorite directors. So I was very excited. And the trailer got me really excited because it looked like nothing that's coming out right now. So excited. But before we get into that, this is going to be a spoiler-heavy podcast, as usual. We can't talk about any movie meaningfully, any of the scenes, or anything like that without going into spoilers. So we'll be going into spoilers. But before we do that, I would say that I would highly recommend this film. What about you? You have to really think about that, hey?
I'm abstaining from opinions for now.
Okay. Okay, that's kind of weird, but okay. So just a bit of a backstory about my boy, David Lowry. He's from Milwaukee, Wisconsin, so shout out Milwaukee, woo! And he made one of my favorite movies of 2017, which was A Ghost Story.
What's that story about?
A Ghost Story? Well, let me tell you, I'm glad you asked. So A Ghost Story is about a man and a woman, they're a couple, and 10 minutes into the movie, the husband dies, and it's about the afterlife.
Mm-hmm.
And I really cannot explain it any more than that, because much like you probably witnessed from this film, it is a film that relies heavily on visual storytelling, not literal storytelling. So what are you looking at? I'm looking at it like in The Ghost Story. I'm looking at a man that has a big white sheet over his head. That is literally what it looks like. But what you're seeing is, in that world, that's what all ghosts look like. And it seems silly at first to disarm you, but that movie is completely about the things you leave behind, love, loss, the human condition. That is like a super, super deep movie. There's too much to even talk about, and that movie's only 90 minutes. So we're not going to spend all day talking about that, but I love that movie. And for anybody else, he did Pete's Dragon, which is a remake of the Disney movie Pete's Dragon. And he's going to be doing the upcoming live action, whatever Disney disgusting piece of shit is going to be, Peter Pan and Wendy, whatever that is supposed to be. But he's directing that. So it's hilarious. So he makes these really, really weird.
Peter Pan and Wendy?
Yeah. So he makes these really weird art films and then makes Disney movies. It's very weird.
That sounds like an X-rated movie.
Oh, no. Peter Pan and Wendy.
Yeah. Ooh. It sounds like a title on one of those sites, you know?
Anyways, I just like David Lowry. I think he is pushing the medium forward in so many great ways. But The Green Knight. What is The Green Knight? Well, The Green Knight is a fantasy retelling of the medieval story of Sir Gawain and the Green Knight, which, for anyone who's unfamiliar with what that story is, it is very simply a story about Sir Gawain accepting a challenge from a mysterious Green Knight who essentially says, if you hit me, in a year I get to hit you back. And the story is supposed to be about just kind of testing the morality of man. I mean, that's what I get from that story. So this is essentially Lowry's version of that story. It's not only that. It obviously goes off in its own sort of different place and expands elements or interprets them into something completely different. But that's basically what the premise of the movie is. And to that point, I felt so bad for you watching the start of this movie, because I knew you had no idea who anyone was, because this movie doesn't tell you anything. It literally just starts
you
and goes, let's go.
Told me we will have Arthur and Merlin in it, and there was no Arthur.
Yes, there was.
Arthur was the king?
Yeah.
That's Arthur?
Yes.
Well, there was no Merlin. I just like I.
But that's the thing, is that the movie expects you to know nothing. That's why it doesn't tell you anything.
I assume for a second I thought like, oh yeah, that must be Arthur, I guess, maybe, question mark, you know.
Yes.
But then I was like, maybe not, and maybe this has nothing to do, and he was just using that as an example. I had no idea.
No, but this is what I mean. Already you're like, what? That was Arthur? So like, Sir Gawain is Arthur's nephew. He's related to him. And I'm sure you, I can see on look in your face, you're like, what? Yes. That is why he goes on the journey, is because he's to prove that he's worthy of the throne. Not because he's just a random guy who really wants to be a knight.
Arthur doesn't have a kid?
No.
Why?
His son gets killed. Like, there's so much more that happens to this backstory of King Arthur. Sir Gawain starts at the end of Arthur's life when he's, like, going to die. Sir Gawain's mother is Arthur's half-sister, and they have an incestuous relationship, and they have a son named Mordred. It's a whole thing. Like, there is so much more backstory to the Arthurian legend up until this movie starts.
Wait.
Yeah, it's a whole thing.
Sir Gawain's mother is what?
Sir Gawain's mother is Arthur's half-sister.
Oh, my God.
She is a witch and uses magic to have a son with him because he will be able to claim his throne. And that's ultimately what she wants. So that's the thing, is that Sir Gawain is the sneaky second attempt by this movie's logic. Because remember what happens in the movie when he gets to the end and he sees his whole life and he's king? That's what she wanted. Remember, she's the one who gave him the runes. She wanted him to become king.
Oh, okay, let's start from the beginning.
There's a lot to unpack here. Yeah, I can tell you're like, confused.
I know, kind of. I'm like, I saw that, and at the same time, I'm like,
Okay, so where do we start? This movie starts just trippy as all hell.
It starts really trippy. I thought the main character was on mushrooms.
There actually is a scene where he eats mushrooms.
Yeah, so I thought, like, this dude has been eating mushrooms all his path, and he's tripping balls, and nothing of this is real.
Right, so, hold on there. Nothing is real. That is actually true. So, the first thing I'll say is, this movie, like I said with a ghost story, is very just visual. It's just you're watching a thing happen, and then it visually flows into the next thing. There are long stretches of this film where there is no dialogue. Like, there's that long scene when he's leaving the town for the first time. It's just him on the horse walking away in what feels like a solid 5 or 6 minute tracking shot of him just slowly walking away in the, like, towards the camera. The city's in the distance, slowly getting further and further away. Kids chase after him to be like, hey, wait, don't go. It's not worth it. They eventually give up. A guy's herding sheep. He goes by. Like, it just shows you this massive landscape. So you're like, okay, this movie's clearly an experience movie. I'm not supposed to go, when are they going to have a sword fight? You're supposed to go, what am I going to see on this journey? And you see some crazy, crazy stuff. Like, stuff that literally, my mouth was just hanging open. I was like, what? He did it. He visually represented this by doing that, like, or
yeah, explain
it's,
that.
It's so
explain
insane.
That. Okay.
It's so insane.
Explain something about the visual representations, because I didn't get any visual representations.
Right.
I'm not saying I'm dumb. I will say it's a language barrier.
Mm-hmm. Yes, you did say at the beginning, you were like, oh shit, there are no subtitles.
Yeah.
Oh my God, I forgot to even say this is a special episode because we actually went to the movie theater.
Yeah.
We can actually do that now.
Yeah, and it was an experience because we sat really, really close to
almost too close to the screen.
Too close. Not almost. We were too close. I don't understand why the seats were there, but it was like,
Because of everything that's just going on, it was hard to really find a showing. So, of course, when I saw it, I was like, we got to go. And now here we are.
Yeah.
But anyways, what do you mean you didn't get anything from the visual representation and it's a language barrier? Do you mean, like, you know there was something behind it and you just don't know what it could have been? Or what do you mean?
Yes, because sometimes I watch movies and I'm like, oh, yeah, this must mean this, or he's imagining this because he's remembering that. But, and it's not like I was lost in the movie because the movie's not fast.
It's no,
like,
it's very, it is very slow.
Yeah, it's really slow. So it's not like I got so lost and so many things are happening. No, one thing is happening at any given moment.
Right.
Like, it's not like three things happening all at once.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not like I got lost. It's more like they were speaking this English that for me was really hard to understand and I just could get it from the context.
Right. So, yes. I want to talk about that.
So for me, if they mention something about, and in your journey, if you find temptation, you like, I'm just saying that as an example, temptation, you should ignore it or do that or whatever. That didn't go into my head.
It kind of, right? Okay. So the first thing I'll say to that is this movie definitely does expect that you know even the most basic things about the Arthurian legend. And for that matter, chivalry and knighthood, which you didn't seem to, because you were asking me a lot of questions at the beginning, being like, why is he doing this? Why is he like that? I'm like, well, it's the knight's code. And you're like, what do you mean the knight's code?
I was like, that's dumb. Just give him a hug.
Yeah. So the point is, the movie expects that you know things that very clearly are just not introduced in your culture at all. So you were just like, what? So why? So who? So let me just say, first off, you need to know this. You need to know who Sir Gawain is, just, and you can figure out who everyone else is by context alone, because I did. And the only other thing you need to know is just the basic code that a knight lives by. And as long as you know basically that it's like, be kind, be generous, fine. You know enough that you would need to understand what he's going through.
Yeah, but he was somehow shitty in some points.
Yes, he was shitty in some points. That's the point of trials. They're not always easy. So essentially, the movie breaks down very simply that Gawain has to go on this journey because of the aforementioned Green Knight fiasco. Essentially, he wants to impress his uncle, King Arthur, and challenges the knight, cuts his head off. The knight, in this really kind of disgusting sounding scene, where it's like his when he moves, it's like the sound of a tree groaning, and there's like the music is very like industrial and loud and stuff like that. So it's like kind of ominous. He just kind of picks his head up and puts it back on. He says,
"He doesn't 1 year's put it back
time. On." Oh, that's right. He doesn't put his head back. He just carries it and walks out. He's like, 1 year's time, and he's like, "Oh shit!"
I didn't find Mr. Three Man disgusting. He was nice.
He's
fella.
Are you okay? Well, I mean, the point is the movie wants you to be scared of him, much like the character is.
No, I always knew he had a good heart.
Well, whatever. So anyways, there's like a time skip, and then they say pretty much a whole year later, and he's kind of spent his whole time whoring and having a good time and just being general like a frat boy, just having a good time, doing whatever. And then suddenly everyone's like, hey, so yeah, that challenge is coming back up again. What you gonna do about that? And he's like, uh-oh. And has to set off on this journey. He has to trek 6 days north through the wilderness and all sorts of craziness to get to the Green Temple and go back to the Green Knight for the aforementioned 1 year in which he gets to return what he did to him in kind. So the movie is pretty much like a survival kind of movie more than anything, because it's that opening with the Green Knight. There is a little bit of an in-between, kind of a 10 minutes of what's he up to now, and then the rest of the movie is out in the wilderness, out in the marshlands, out in the deep woods, out in the mountains, you know, all this kind of crazy survival stuff. And while he's out there, he hallucinates or is enchanted by magic, whatever you want to call it, those things happen to him, and it's kind of like a crazy spiritual journey. So that is literally what happens. But everything that happens in those scenes is really kind of where a lot of the interpretation comes in. So we might as well just, I feel like, just kind of go scene by scene and really be like, okay, what does the scene look like? What happens? How did it make you feel? Because that's, I feel like that's really all this movie is. It's like a just very emotional experience. So you have the scene at the beginning with the Green Knight.
Yes, Mr. Tree Man.
Yeah, Mr. Tree Man.
Comes into Christmas dinner.
Yes, Christmas.
Interrupts Christmas dinner and
with King Arthur and his lads.
Yes. And he makes the lady read his challenge, and yes, she gets possessed.
King Arthur's wife reads this note, and it's a creepy, like, like demon voice thing, and she's possessed by the letter.
Yeah, and it was, yeah, basically, like, as you already said, you get to do one...
He calls it one strike.
One strike?
One strike against me.
And then you come to my place, and I do one strike against you in a year. And then he even puts down his weapon and just,
he gives him his weapon, yes. Yeah. He says something to the effect of, you will claim my arms and my honor and my glory. Like, essentially, he's saying, if you do this to me, you get to live like you're an awesome guy for a year. And then... That's that. So it's, you know, it sounds like an enticing offer, I suppose. Yeah.
And then Arthur gives him his sword and he...
To Sir Gawain.
And then I was like, dude, like, that's so dumb. Just like hug the guy.
Yeah,
and then he'll give you a hug the next year.
Yeah, of course.
What a great like exchange.
Yeah,
right?
The first thing Kat says is like, well, just don't attack him. Why don't you just be nice to him? I'm like, look, it doesn't work like that. It's like, well, but why? I'm like, well, he's a knight. Why is he a knight? That's stupid.
Yeah, like, just hug him. Who cares?
Things
like,
just started to unravel
I'm
from
like,
there.
Just like make your kingdom bigger and with friendship.
Just be nice.
Just be nice.
Can't you just be nice?
Can you just be nice? You know, and no, he then goes and cuts his head. And I'm like,
yes.
Oh,
Sir Gawain thinks he's being smart because he's like, well, if I cut his head off, I win. But no.
But no.
No, it backfires. Like we said, just picks up his head and goes, 1 year's time. One thing I will say, because I think you brought this up earlier, but the dialogue is very hard to get into if you're not a native English speaker or at least familiar with like a lot of Shakespearean text, because it is very, very much like, what thither does thy heart bound? Come yonder window, it break. Like, you know, stuff like that. Like, very, very... I know you're looking at me like, what did he just say?
Yeah.
Like, very old English text. So all the actors are like 100% dedicated to it, you know, with all the really difficult Cockney accents and everything, or, you know, high English accents, all this kind of stuff. So
yeah,
it's even a whole thing.
Yeah, even when I hear Spanish people from Spain speak, well, I don't understand them, but I can totally see if you learned Latin Spanish, it will be hard for you.
Sure.
Or people from Argentina, they have a really strong accent. But man, yeah, I just had to kind of like guess it from context.
Which, thankfully, this movie actually is fairly light on dialogue anyway, so it didn't really matter for like that whole back two thirds. Because the first third is really where all the dialogue and talking is. But, I mean, I thought it was kind of interesting the way everyone had, like, what I would assume to be a very, like, period-focused accent. Like, King Arthur has, like, a very kind of, like, Teutonic-sounding accent. So they try to do a lot to differentiate everybody, even though they never really address anyone by name. For the most part, except for Gawain, which they call Gawain. But yeah, I don't know. It's hard to talk about the performances because there really aren't any besides Dev Patel, who plays Gawain. But I really liked him, but it's not really about his acting ability. The movie is kind of like just... You know what it is? It's kind of a lot like The Revenant, which I don't think you saw that movie. But just for anyone who has seen The Revenant, it's not really that Leo's a great actor in that movie, is that the character just kind of goes through a lot physically, and you can kind of see it on the actor's face that it's very physically demanding. But like, there isn't a lot of talking from the character, so you're not like connected with them on that level. You're just connected with them because you're like, wow, that looks like it hurts. And that's kind of the same thing with this movie. You just kind of look and go, ooh, that looked like it hurt. Ooh, I wouldn't want to eat bad mushrooms. Ooh boy, I would be surprised by a fox talking to me. I would be surprised by a bunch of giants that literally look like bald porcelain doll people that scream a sing song and carry giant porcelain giant babies.
What was that?
That was insanity.
Yeah, this movie was weird.
So just like the crazy tall giant people thingy, this movie is kind of like an acid flashback where everything that happens after he gets into the wilderness just... The sense of time and space gets lost very intentionally. But the first thing that happens to him is he's walking through like an old battlefield and runs into like a grave robber. And the grave robber is just kind of like, oh, you know, whatever, just some guy. Another great shot, in my opinion, because it's just a big, long tracking shot through the field of all the dead people. And it's so muddy. And it's like an 8-minute take. He's on the horse and he's riding. And then the grave robber guy runs out from the distance. And he's up beside the horse. And they're just walking and talking and walking and talking for like 7 minutes. And then he says, oh, yeah, it's over the river, over yonder. There's a thing. He goes, really? And then turns the horse. And the horse turns away. And then goes off into the distance, and he's kind of left there being like, well, you don't have any kindness for a poor, a blackguard like me. And he's just like, oh, of course. Yeah, sorry. Throws him a coin. And he's just like, oh, okay. Well, yeah, that's cool. But yeah, no, it's totally right over yonder. You should go check out that river. Goes, gets jumped. Same guy. He's got two friends. They steal all his stuff. Tie him up and leave him for dead.
Why did he died there but didn't?
Okay, so after they tie him up and they essentially run off with his stuff, and it looks like just as his journey has begun, Sir Gawain has failed already. You're like, oof, tough break. And then essentially the camera does a 360 pan. It's him lying down tied on the ground. Does a 360 pan. When it comes back to him, he's dead, like long dead, like just bones. His clothes are on the bones, but it's like he's just a cartoon skeleton dead. And then it holds on that for a really long time, and we're all just like, oh god, I guess he just died. And it dollies
like,
in
oh,
on him. And then as it dollies in on him, then it's just like he's awake again, and he starts moving. So what's literally happening is he's seeing that he's gonna die there, and that's just what it visually is. That's what's going on in his mind. So this is what I mean. Like, David Lowry's filmmaking techniques that he used in A Ghost Story are nothing but stuff like that. So because I've seen that movie, and that movie's a bigger head trip than this one, I was so prepared for the way he visually represents things. I was like, okay, the character's feeling this. That's why he's...
that makes sense.
And this is what I mean. So the movie does that where they don't change the perspective. Everything is what Gawain thinks is happening to me. So whenever things are happening and they're like, well, that's insane, that's so fantastical, he thinks that's happening. He could have been tripping out on those poison mushrooms. There could be actual magic. It could be because he's dehydrated and he's hallucinating in the wilderness. That was what was originally great about the story, is that he kind of goes on this crazy survival hike and claims he saw these crazy things. And everyone's just like, wow, that was a test. And it was all just to go back so he could get beheaded. What an honorable guy. It was his duty, and he went back through all that hell. You know what I mean? Like, that's essentially the benefit of his story, is that because it was his duty, he went through all that hardship because it was his responsibility.
Yeah, but I don't understand, like, a couple of things. Well, I guess if you just say magic, you can.
Well, that's the thing, because in Arthurian legend, there is magic. Like, they remember they make a joke early on in the tavern where he's like, yeah, and his mother's a witch. Yeah. That is true. That's not... Oh, the times, they're trying to tie it into that to kind of make it feel more grounded for people who aren't familiar with the legend. But his mom actually is a witch. That is real in the story.
Yeah, I guess it's all magic because when he helps the ghost, mm-hmm. the ghost gives him.
Oh my God, that's another great scene. That's like, yeah, the second trial. He goes to that house because he's like, I need a place to crash for the night after his crazy experience with the robbers. And then he just finds this woman wakes him up. And then it's the woman you're talking about, and she's like, you got to get my head out of the lake. And he's like, what? Everything he goes through is trying to test his honor or his kindness or his charity, all those things. So this woman just wants his help. And he says, well, what are you going to give me in return? She's like, how could you say such a thing? And he feels bad. And he's like, yeah, I don't know. Well, you're right. Gets the head, goes on a crazy acid trip through the water where everything turns red. And he's like, floating through the void, crazy filmmaking stuff happens. It's hard to explain.
But that's what I don't understand.
The crazy filmmaking stuff? I think that's supposed to represent magic. Whenever things like that happen, it represents the world becoming distorted through the magic of this area he's in. Because remember when he's walking and the camera starts spinning and flips upside down?
Yeah.
And then he just arrives somewhere. It's trying to disorient you because he's lost, right? And I think the camera is supposed to represent the magic in the forest or in that area that's manipulating things. Because the camera always does more experimental things when the temptation, when he's being really tempted with something. You know, like the music and everything really starts to pick up when it's like the moment of temptation is coming. He's about to crack. You know what I mean? Because it's all those forces really trying to hone in on him and lead him astray. No? Yeah? Because that's a thing. Think about it like this. At the beginning when he leaves, his mom gives him a sash that has like a rune in it, right? She's like, if you wear this, you'll be protected. You need to keep it on. The robbers steal that from him, so essentially he's lost. If there was magic in that rune and it was protecting him, he doesn't have it anymore. And he goes on what you could argue is maybe the harder part of the journey, because then later he ends up in a castle with a lord and a lady. And the lord is a very generous man. Stay here as long as you need to. Christmas is around the corner. I'll feed you every night. Don't you worry about a thing. And he has an ultra, ultra tempty wife. The moment he steps in there, she's given him the eye. And you're like, I see what's going on here. He's supposed to be tested with hospitality and then also all this desire and stuff. But if you'll remember, after the crazy jerk-off scene...
So what was that? She was fucking him? Or?
No, she jerked him off.
Oh, that's it?
That was the witch, the old witch lady that was in there. Remember the old lady that's it? That also... So there's the lord and the lady, then what looks like just like an old lady with a blindfold.
Yeah.
That she's just kind of around. She is also a witch. So she is of the same type of witch that his Gawain's mother is. So that sash, if you remember, when he gets to the end, is what keeps him alive and makes him become an old man. And then when he gives up on that,
that's when he does.
Is when he's allowed to leave, because he's like, oh, well, you're not afraid to die now. Because the whole point was the Green Knight could not respect that he was afraid
of dying.
He's like, what do you mean? What are you afraid of? What have I given you any reason to be afraid? So the Green Knight, because he's immortal, lets you cut his head off. He's like, yeah, no big deal. But as long as you come back and meet me with the same courage, I'll respect that. And because he kept the sash on the first time he was there, that's why he ran away. The magic was, quote unquote, protecting him by making him afraid. That's what his mom was trying to do, because his mom wanted to become king and take over.
And
that goes back to the Arthurian legend. You would know that if you were familiar with him. Oh, that's what her motivation is. That makes sense.
Oh, yeah, that part.
That's what I'm saying.
And why she kept being young? You said that in the movie.
Because she's a witch.
Oh, that's it?
Yes.
Okay, so what I'm understanding is that that old lady gave him a new stash thing. It wasn't the same.
No, it was not the
same. Oh, I thought it was the same. No, I thought it wasn't like the same. Found it somewhere.
I think the point being, the reason that it looks the same is because the ritual is the same, but it messes with Gawain's head. Because he's like, how do you have... But this is what I started with. It just adds more to the whole fuel of him not knowing what's real. Because he just loses track so early on, right? And I'm like, it's because that lady was a witch. Because she transforms back into the old lady. I'm like, it's because she's a witch. She just made you another talisman. Because, of course, she knows about you. Remember that scene at the beginning when they're doing the seance?
Yeah.
They probably all know each other and then can communicate telepathically or something. That's what I mean. When you have just magic, you can explain so many things. I mean, well, they're magic. So, and it fits with the high fantasy setting. The movie welcomes that kind of thought. Being like, yep, here's some crazy magical stuff. And you're like, yeah, I guess it is. Because anything that you see that you cannot explain has to be magic, right? If it's beyond reasoning. So he shows you crazy things like giant people. And you're like, that's weird. Well, it must be magic. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
Who gives him... Why the ghost gives him back that machete thing?
Oh, the axe?
Yeah.
I think that's just supposed to be the pervasiveness of his duty. It's his responsibility catching up with him. Because the axe always comes back, because that's what he's supposed to do, is bring the axe back to the Green Knight. He can't not bring him the axe.
So the axe just...
The axe just finds its way home.
Oh, okay.
More magic stuff.
More magic, okay.
Yeah. See, that's the thing. When you know there's going to be magic, like me, you just go, that was magic. Okay, I get what's going on here. But for you, you're still trying to figure out what the movie's supposed to be. Yes and no?
Yeah, it's yes and no. It's more like, I guess if I think about the movie, I will appreciate it more. Or if I had like the opportunity to, let's say, sit with like six other people that watch the movie and we kind of like share ideas about it.
Oh, no, this is definitely a sharing
movie. I might appreciate it more because it will be like everyone will be catching things mm-hmm. and explaining things that you may miss.
Well, right, and the point being, talk about them all as they come at you instead of being like, wait, which one are you talking about? Because there's a lot. There's so much to parse through with this film. Like, I honestly can't cover it all, and I've only seen it the once. I want to see it again mm-hmm. because as much as I had the literary references on my side to kind of be like, I know exactly where this is going. There are so many crazy visuals that I'm just like, I just want to watch that again because I'm like, what did that mean? I don't know. I just know basically where the movie goes because, you know, that's supposed to be the easiest part to understand about your movie. And, you know, I got that. But, you know, there's a lot of visual metaphor that I'm like, man, I wish I understood with the flaming head at the beginning. I wasn't really paying attention with the movie as much. We were still kind of just sitting down. So I missed that. And I'm like, I wish I could have been paying attention to that a bit more. But I would assume it's maybe just something that foreshadows the ending. I don't know. I just didn't really get to pay attention to it, unfortunately. Ha ha, the joys of going to the movie theater. But yeah, I don't know. It's I wish you could have seen what I saw because I felt really bad. Because it was so simple. It was like, as long as you just know that guy's King Arthur and that guy is his nephew, so much more of the movie makes sense. Because as long as you understand that relationship dynamic, you go, okay, I get the motivations. I know why he's doing this now. I get it. And at least you have that to kind of ground you to the journey. You're like, oh, he wants to impress his dad, who's the king. Or okay, so not his dad, his uncle.
So now I understand one thing. He keeps the sash. And that's when he behaves cowardly. And goes back to the kingdom, most likely lying that he defeated.
And lives his whole life in regret and shame.
Well, definitely shame, but then you see how after that, it's so easy for him to be mean, mm-hmm. you know, like it's kind of like a metaphor that it only takes one bad thing for your morals to kind of crumble.
Exactly. You betray your morals once, you betray them every time.
Yeah, because it's easier and easier every mm-hmm. time.
And that's exactly what happens. I guess we should mention this. After he goes to the Green Knight, and I think we kind of sort of explained it, but what happens is he gets there, and it's this very long, drawn-out scene where he sits down and he waits for the Green Knight to wake up, and he sits there, and you're like, wow, he's really showing some courage, sitting there for what feels like, I think it's maybe a day or two.
It's just a day, because he arrived the 23rd, I think.
I think you're right. But anyway, so it's a long amount of time, but not that long, and he just waits there, and you're like, wow, what a stand-up guy. And the Green Knight have like a minor discussion, just like, hey, are you ready? He's like, yeah, I'm ready. I came all this way. And he flinches once.
He flinches once.
The Green Knight's like, come on, man, don't be a coward. And he's like, okay. Flinches twice. He's like, really, man? When I came to you, did I flinch? And he, you know, calls him out, is trying to test his mettle. And then ultimately what happens is when he goes for the final blow, he gets scared and runs away. And then he runs and runs and runs and runs. And then magically his horse appears. Oh my God, the horse that got stolen at the beginning of my journey. There it is. Just over yonder. At Riverside, no less. And wow, things are finally working out for him. He runs away. He rides away as fast as he can. And that's when the rest of the movie happens, with going and following and then him growing older. And there's like a second final act to this movie, essentially.
Yeah, but it's like in fast forward.
It's not fast forward. It's a little bit quicker.
Yeah.
But when the first scene starts, you're like, oh, we're just following him after. And it'll do time skips. And I think the whole sequence takes maybe 10 minutes, but it just kind of goes through his life afterwards. And it's just miserable. He just does so many terrible things. And like mm-hmm. you said, it's like, because he had compromised himself once, he steals a baby from a mom, like this whore he used to see who had feelings for him. He completely shuts down and steals her baby because he gets her pregnant, and just like lives like a coward, hides away his whole life,
runs away from his enemies until the last moment. He's sitting on the throne and his whole family abandons him. And someone's beating down the door and he knows who it is. He knows it's the Green Knight. And he looks down and he has this like wound or this cut in his shirt. And he starts pulling at it. And the sash that he got from that witch lady starts coming out of his wound. And he pulls it out and his head falls off. And then flashback, he's on his knees by the Green Knight. And he looks up and says, wait. And he takes the sash off and throws it on the ground. He's like, now I'm ready. It's hilarious. Then the tree guy bends down and then just draws a line on his, he draws a line on his throat and goes, gotcha.
Yeah, I told you he was nice.
Yes, he was. He was just like, I was just testing you. You are an honorable knight, sir. Please go and be merry. Essentially, yeah, is what he says. And then he goes and he gets to go home with his head held high. And the movie just ends.
Yeah, the movie just
ends. The movie literally ends right at the moment where he's like, you're a knight now. Go with honor. The movie ends.
I don't know. For me, the movie still was as, like, for me, it feels like the idea was better than the execution. That's how I feel about the movie.
I completely disagree. This is the most interesting execution of this idea that I could have ever expected from anybody in the modern era of cinema. I'm not even kidding. They don't make movies like this anymore. This made me think of Excalibur, which if you had seen that, you would have known everything you would have need to know to understand this movie. Be like, ah, I saw literally Arthur's entire backstory. And then this movie would start. So I would recommend anyone who watches this movie to watch that first. But yeah, like this is like a shocking movie to me that this exists. And it was made for $15 million.
Yeah.
I respect, because they don't bother making movies for that price anymore.
No, that's the thing. Like I could feel it. I could feel that the budget was low for some reason, and I didn't knew that.
I don't think so. Like I don't think the movie shows that it has a low budget. I think the movie is just low key because that's the way the story is. It's a guy who just survives in the woods. What more do you really need?
Mm-hmm.
And if anything, I'm glad, because if they had $20 million more dollars, I can only imagine the studio saying, well, can we throw in some more sword fights? Which would defeat the whole purpose. Being a knight is not about sword fights. It's about living with honor, which is what the movie's about, right? So adding more money, what would that do? Would it make the CGI look nicer? Maybe. It wasn't distracting to me. So there's a CGI fox that follows him around for a bit. I was like, okay, whatever. The Green Knight looks great.
Yeah, he looks great.
So, like, in terms of, like, whatever CGI there might have been, it's like, well, what more do you really add? I also think it's kind of funny to see King Arthur's kingdom as a shitty little castle.
Yeah.
Because it's super contrary to what we expect.
Yeah.
I like that.
Yeah, yeah. But see, like, you're appreciating this movie from a total different point of view.
Absolutely.
You know about these things. Mm-hmm. And you know about how they came up with these ideas and the reasoning and the artistry behind all that. That's why for you it's like such an amazing movie.
Of course. It is so meticulously crafted.
But for me, that I don't know those things and nothing. I don't know anything about how film is made.
Mm-hmm.
So I just noticed I'm so used to so high budget and great CGI or amazing, like, oh, they will literally build a castle just for the movie. Mm-hmm. That, as I said, like, the movie was cheap looking and you just verified it, like, low budget.
Mm-hmm.
And you're actually impressed by it.
Yes, and what could do with $15 million.
And I'm not disappointed by it at all. But yeah, I guess if you're telling me medieval times, I will expect, like, I don't know, an entire huge kingdom, because that's what movies have been selling to us.
Of course.
But honestly, like, if you think about it, that wouldn't have been that.
Well, and not
true.
Only that, this is supposed to be the end of King Arthur's life. He wasn't living in the lap of luxury when he was dying. So it's also kind of shows how minimal it has become. So if you do have that expectation, you're supposed to go, oh, yeah, wow, it's looking pretty rough for the Knights of the Round Table right now. They're in, like, a hall.
Oh, you know what? It's just, like, although I didn't watch Game of Thrones, mm-hmm. I watched the last episodes. So I remember the kingdoms there.
Mm-hmm.
How huge they were.
Yes, they're very opulent.
And how, like, so many people were living there. So that's why, like, his kingdom is so tiny. It mm-hmm. looks like it has, like two blocks of kingdom and, like, a castle. So for me, that was, like, the not that impressive part. Because I guess, yeah, I went with the idea that, oh, we're gonna go and watch some medieval shit.
Yeah, that, well, and that's, like, the thing, is that it's actually way yeah. more accurate.
Yeah, I would say so, because, like, when you see, like, those old castles, some pictures that I have seen online, those castles are not, like, Disney princesses' castles. They're, like,
yeah, of course not.
Rocks.
Yeah, they're,
and
just,
it's
they're
a tower
just, they're
there.
Functional.
Yeah, they're functional. It's, like, and there's a circle around where the town used to be. Oh, yeah, that's it, you know? Great.
Yeah, and that's the thing. Like, I, like, like you said, when you're like me and you see so many movies all the time, you get tired of seeing the same thing way quicker. And, you know, to your point about, like, oh, the budget being low, this used to be, and I'm not saying not even that long ago, like 20 years ago, that is how movies were made. Movies were made for less than $20 million, or they were made for less than $80 million. And if in a very rare case, you might have like a $100 million movie and you go, whoa, that was a lot.
Well, like, but like if
James
you...
Cameron would get $200 million for Titanic, which is like the most amount of money spent on a movie, I think, even still today. I think with inflation, maybe that has changed, but it is a very, very, it was and held the title for the most expensive movie ever made. And that was made in 1999. So that was very recently that that big of a budget of a movie existed. But before that, some of the biggest blockbusters were made for less than $50 million.
Now maybe they used to pay people less.
No, they were just much smarter with the filmmaking and didn't have CGI. CGI is what eats up the most of people's budgets because it can go on forever. You can just keep working and keep redrawing and keep trying again. Oh, well, I don't like the way that looks. Let's pre-visit again. It just wastes so many man hours. But if you design everything to be filmed on set, there is no work that needs to be done afterwards.
Why do they don't do that?
Because it takes more work and dedication. And
but
movies
it takes like it takes dedication to the CGI people as well.
They don't care about them. They don't have a union.
Oh, that's the whole thing.
Yeah, they don't
they
have a union.
They just take advantage of yes. the poor CGI mm-hmm. people. There
that's
you
right.
go.
They don't have a union. They take advantage of them. And yeah, that also would require that they have to spend more time planning a thing, but they don't want to do that. The way movies and TV needs to be made now is we need to know what the popular idea is. We need to write it as fast as possible and film it as fast as possible and release it as fast as possible. So with that in mind, how are you supposed to spend what I would assume David Lowery probably spent like 2 years in pre-production designing the way this movie would look and every visual element and all the editing and all the different visuals he wanted. He planned all that stuff. So then when you're there on the day, you go, okay, we're going to shoot four plates. We're going to have him, we're going to have fire, we're going to have a melting crown, and we're going to put them all together. But you only can do that because you know exactly that you're going to put them all together of his face on fire with a melting crown. You can't shoot that just in case, which is how most things get made now. We'll shoot everything we need to. It's called block shooting, in which they'll shoot every single possible thing they can in one set and then move on. So let's say I walk into the scene and I'm meeting you for the first time. Hi, I'm Joe.
Hi, Joe.
Hey, what's up?
Nothing.
Cut. Okay, we got that done. Now you're coming in, it's 3 months later, and you're just breaking up because it's going to happen in the same area, so we're just going to shoot them back to back. I walk in the door. You bitch, I hate you.
No, you don't.
Sorry, cut. Okay, Joe, you got to try that again. Remember, I know you guys have just met for the first time, but now you really hate her. We need you to act it up.
I see.
It doesn't actually happen like that. I'm trying to illustrate a point.
Mm-hmm.
What I'm trying to say is the scheduling for modern television and modern movies, because of their insane budgets, can buy the fact that they don't have any time. That's why the budgets are so high, and which is why they rely on so much CGI, because they can do it later. They don't call it fix it in post because people try to avoid doing that. They do it because it happens all the time. Like, it's a joke. People go, fix it in post. Because that's how everything gets made now. No one cares. I got $200 million. I better see a return on my investment or else. Well, we're Disney, of course. We promise you. We promise you you'll get your money back. Ugh. And that's how you get disasters like Raya and The Last Dragon, because it needs to sell or else. So let's rewrite everything and try to cater to everybody, therefore catering to nobody.
Yeah.
And then you get a movie like this that is carving its own place in the world that I'm sure most people are going to hate. And only 10 years from now, people are going to think about this movie again and go, you know, it actually wasn't that bad.
No,
it was the first of a new era of filmmaking. It's not the first, but it might be bringing back an old era of filmmaking, which I hope it does.
No, it definitely, it is a great movie and I'm 100% recommend it.
Mm-hmm. Oh, so you've changed it.
No, I never.
Well, you abstained before.
I abstained because I wanted to understand the movie.
Gotcha.
And I did tell you that, like, I think as soon as I understand what's going on, I will like it. Because at first I was like, I know it's a good movie, but why?
Right. Right? Like, you could tell.
I could tell. But that's the thing is, like, as I said, although it looked low budget, mm-hmm. doesn't mean it looked bad.
Right.
It's just, like, I just had that feeling inside of me that this doesn't look like all that Hollywood shit from different angles mm-hmm. and
yeah.
stuff.
Yeah, I know exactly. It's not, well... To your point just now, all the different angles, you're right. They didn't shoot the shit out of it. They shot one take and they're like, that's the scene.
Yeah.
I like that. And they went with it. They actually used artistic license to interpret film into a story.
Yeah.
Oh my God. I can't believe in 2021 that I can get a new movie that even thought to do that. It blows my mind.
Yeah, it's interesting seeing a movie that doesn't do the YouTube thing of every 4 seconds there's a cut or every 10 mm-hmm. seconds there's a cut, something yeah. like that. Like, ugh, man, like there's so many bad movies that use those techniques and
yeah.
it's so annoying because they just think that people don't have the...
brain power or the attention span
yeah to like just pay attention mm-hmm. for so long, and these movies totally like
it is the exact opposite.
It's the exact opposite.
Trusts that you want to pay attention. Like, look, if you don't want to pay attention, just shut it off and go away.
Yeah,
like they, and I don't mean that the movie's like a dick about it, because there are some movies that I won't get into the French New Wave now, but I hate the French New Wave. That's all I'll say about it. But the point being, there are plenty of movies that have contempt for the audience, and that's like the point. And I hate those movies. This movie wants you to be in. Like, it wants you to welcome you in with open arms and say, look at this crazy, exciting world. Look at all these weird visuals. You're like, what is that? They're like, come inside. Come into my arms. But then we're not going to explain who anyone is. So it like it's up to a point. It's like welcoming, but then it stops you at the door and goes.
It opens
five
a
bucks,
debate.
Please.
It opens a debate between your friends. It opens a conversation. Mm-hmm. Like if you watch this movie and then see someone in 2 months and all of a sudden you guys are talking about this movie, it opens like it will make you talk.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
It's like a real piece of art.
Yeah.
Because it's interpretive and doesn't give you all the answers mm-hmm. and wants you to try to figure it out and it wants you to have fun doing that so it doesn't try to alienate the audience.
Mm-hmm.
And then at the same time, it just trusts that you care about watching it. Which, you know, I haven't seen Black Widow and I'm not going to go see it because Disney movies all have the same problem. And that is they don't expect you to be able to sit through it, which is insane that they're in the business of making movies.
You like Marvel movies.
I like them sometimes, but I like them when I have a reason to go see them, or like there's a character I like, or like something to care about. Unfortunately, I really liked Black Widow as a character, but spoiler alert, she's dead. I don't care about her anymore. My time liking that character ended when, you know, Endgame came out in 2017 or 2018 or whatever it was. Like, that was the end for me.
She died?
She literally died. So it's a prequel movie, essentially. So I'm just like, well, I don't
prequels.
Care then.
Disney loves those.
Disney just wants to make more visual content for people to use their eyeballs to gaze at. Like I said, I don't know why they're in the business of making movies, because they don't trust that anyone can sit through them. So they just got to throw more flashy shit. What can we get? Oh, kids, they need a cute thing. Throw in a cute thing. Oh, what are we going to do? Oh, it's. I don't want to go off on that again. We got a whole podcast about that already.
Yeah, I think it's a recurring topic in this podcast.
Yeah,
the Disney.
The hate, the Disney hate train.
Yeah.
Yeah. I wish I had more to say, because I just wish I could convince everyone to go see it, because it is so good.
We're already spoiled so much, though.
I know. But the thing is, we spoiled so much, but you still just have to see it to really believe it. Because when these things come at you, you're just kind of like, whoa, I did not expect that. Because the movie like progressively one-ups itself until it gets to the end, and you're like, what is happening? And you know what's funny? The two guys at the top, at the end of the theater, who are sitting there by themselves, and the guy gets up and he's like, wait, so did that scene at the end mean he didn't die? It was so... It's just like, when you have people like that in the theater, that's when you shake your head and go, and this is why cinema's dead.
Well, I don't know. Like, for me, I didn't even understand the last...
the whole ending part?
The ending part, because I kind of was like, oh yeah, that's his daughter, right?
Mm-hmm.
But it didn't connect to me. Like, oh yeah, I guess he just had his life after that. Didn't connect in my head.
Mm-hmm.
So, well, I don't know if I can keep blaming my language barrier, but that dude maybe also was like kind of confused.
No, but that's what I'm saying. Like, that guy's an English speaker and didn't know what the hell was going on. But again, it's because of that Shakespearean English, that really old-timey, culturally and time-specific dialect. They're just like, that's it. Do you not understand what King Arthur's saying? Well, sorry. Or you don't really understand what that muddy peasant in the field is saying? Well, sorry. And that's the thing. Like I said before, it ultimately doesn't really matter because it's a visual movie. It's all about following the character and just visually representing and visually showing everything that happens or everything that he sees. No one talks about it. It's just they show you stuff. And it's like cinema in its purest form. And they just don't make movies like this anymore. And yeah, I mean, I got nothing left to say. I really got nothing left to say. Please go watch it. Please.
I'm going to put a spoiler alert or like
a double spoiler alert on this one.
Yeah, on the video.
Please go watch it. It's so good. It deserves your money. It deserves your money. It is. Yes. It needs to exist. More movies like this need to exist. Please go see it. Let Hollywood know. Vote with your dollar. I know. Now that we're back in the world where you actually can go to the movie theater, so it's just like. Maybe, I don't know. Go to the movie theater. any closing thoughts?
Please like, comment, and subscribe.
Yeah, smash that motherfucking like button.
And ring the bell.
Yeah.
And we'll see you all next week.
Yeah, let's go eat dinner.